You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast. Hello there, I'm Stuart Goldsmith. Welcome back. This is wonderful Australian comic Celia Pakola.
Just the coolest thing in the world. My friend writes Doctor Who plays.
Oh, sweet.
And,
You in it?
What? Pakolas?
I love it. That's fantastic.
I'm a centurion and I
that's
get killed.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
They're really good. Like, any kind of radio play is such a different thing.
Yeah.
Because they have to describe everything. Like, it's amazing. They have to go, oh no, the monster's going to eat your foot off. Oh, just ate your foot. Like, who turned out the lights?
They have to find ways of making those challenges. Have you ever written anything like that? Have you ever written plays or anything?
Plays, yeah.
Well, what sort of plays have you written?
Oh, mate. Is this recording? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we're still on. You may have a face full of wagon wheel, but we're pressing on.
That's my favourite way to be. I wrote a play when I was an idiot. what's that word? Teenager. Which is sort of how it was when I was starting to get into comedy, actually. I wrote a serious play, full-length play, wrote and directed it myself. And people laughed the whole way through. It wasn't supposed to be funny, guys. It's angst, right? It's,
oh, my God.
I have some serious stuff to say. But, that was really just before I did my first gig, I think. So in uni, but there was five of us started a theatre company.
Okay.
Because we all went to uni wanting to be actors, sort of, but I bailed on that idea very quickly because I know that I don't have the dedication or the sort of earnestness that you need to be an actor, the sort of begging, you know what I mean? Like, you have to go around. I didn't like doing auditions and having to go, please put me in, I'm worth it, and then judging you. I really didn't like it. So that's why we started.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, sorry. The other thing I was going to say, I should have said earlier on, was sometimes I might make notes.
Try not to be distracted. That's the thing I should have said.
All I'm writing is, we'll come back to that, because I think there's an interesting parallel there, but
So we started our own theatre company, so that the idea was we'll put on our own stuff and then people can come and see us rather than having to go around and beg and, like, I couldn't handle it whenever they asked stuff like, here's my tipping point, okay? Can you just pretend like you're eating a burger and really enjoying it? No, I can't. I can't. I refuse to mind eating a burger and look like I'm enjoying it in front of you. Who are you to judge me? Anyway, so we started a theatre company. We did a couple of sketch shows that went well, and then we directed someone else's play. And the idea was we'd all swap roles. So one show you'd act in it, the next show you'd do publicity, the next one you'd tech. So at the end of it, we'd all be multi-skilled. Mm-hmm. We'd all think. And the one that I wrote was, it was about the masks we wear. I'd say it'd be that.
Okay.
It was about a person who had thought that he could scientifically make himself into the best person possible based on interactions with other people.
Okay.
If that sort of sounds right. So he'd be alternate personalities and study them, and it was a love story and blah, 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 blah. So I did that, and it was supposed to be serious, and people laughed all the way through. And
how did that feel?
It was all right. It was okay. okay. I vividly remember the opening night sitting in the show at the back, and I just had a massive panic attack because it hadn't occurred to me that I had just put myself in front of strangers to judge me.
Okay.
Like, it hadn't even crossed my mind until I was actually sitting in a room full of strangers about to watch something that I wrote, of how intense that would be. And then they laughed. It was fine. Like, they weren't like... It turned out to be good. I mean, it was this dialogue, and I didn't realise it was funny, so it was good, but...
Okay. It wasn't that they were laughing at the heartfelt things that you thought were really important.
No, I mean, I'd laugh at it now just because of how wanky it was.
Okay.
You know when you think you're having all of these really groundbreaking... Oh, no one's ever thought of the world this way, and then seems so simplistic and so... sort of silly now, but I do love theatre. I'd love to write theatre again at some point. I love it. I love it so much. I can see it in my head because it's so immediate. Like, I can understand, like, writing a film, I don't know that if I could do that because I couldn't handle going and then cut away of
you have this to think thing. Visually, don't you? Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah.
But on stage, I can understand it. There's people walk on and they talk and they leave, particularly arguments. There's nothing I like more than a well-scripted argument on stage.
So who are your favourite playwrights?
The best play I've ever seen, changed my life, was The Goat by Edward Albee I saw in New York when I was 19 with my mum, because she left my dad and went, I'm going overseas, do you want to come? And I went, hell yeah, I want to go. And we just randomly chose this play, and it turns out it was the first run of it. You know, whenever you see a big play and you just assume it's been going for 50 years, and it had Bill Pullman in it. Have you heard of it at all?
I've heard of Albee. I've read some Albee, but I don't know The Goat.
It's brilliant. I'm not going to ruin it, but basically it is played completely naturalistically. It is about a man, a married man with a son, teenage son, I think, who is having an affair with a goat.
Okay.
He's in love with a goat. And it is wonderful. So it's all played absolutely realistically. And the wife is finding out this information and they have this huge fight. And I just love it because you go, that would never happen, but it could happen. Like, it's based in reality.
Yes, okay, okay.
But it's so weird that, of course, everyone in the audience is going, what? And the wife's going, what? And smashing vases and stuff. And it's just really... It was wonderful. And I came out of that and Mum went, oh, that was nice, wasn't it? And I went, I need you to not speak to me. so I loved it. So, yeah, that's a play. And then, after that play is when I started, did my first gig not long after that.
Okay. Yes. Was that as a direct result of the play or was that the...
Nope. I was hoping you'd ask me for my origin story just because I like...
Yeah, go on, do it.
No, I just like the term origin story.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Makes
comics sound like they're sort of X-Men, which
I
love.
Yeah, that's kind of deliberate. that's descriptive of my worldview because I do think that we're all X-Men. I think that we're all kind of superpowered warrior poets and that there's normal people, and then when one of those normal people says the magic word, e.g. can I do a gig, they become one of us.
That's so cool. Do you read a lot of comics?
I used to read a lot more than I do now,
because that would be I would read that. You could do a comic based on comedians and they have superpowers based on what their sort of style is.
I used to want to do one about street performers because I have this kind of impossibly romantic notion of what performance means because of my background in street performing and how that was like you're a normal guy and then you put a suitcase down in the middle of the street and that's like Shazam and then you've become something else.
Seriously, I think that's a great idea.
I'll edit this out and I'll save that.
But like based on like if there was someone who was super based on their performance and what they are and do, if someone was like super whimsy, they have unicorn power or whatever, like whatever their thing is that they do, or someone who's really likes to fight with the audience, who's good at putting hecklers down, Wow.
Okay, well, so we'll talk about that another time. Yeah.
So the origin story, really, I was dating a comedian. Everything in my life is very a lot of weird coincidences, and I know everyone's is when you just look at, because what are the chances of you being anywhere ever, but I was on a first date with another guy, never been to a comedy club before ever. Went, what are we going to do? Looked in the paper, there's like one comedy room in Melbourne that runs every night of the week. Didn't even just I'll go to that. And there was a guy who was on who I'd met once before during doing the law review, which is like a sketch. And I thought he was super cute. And I, this is awful, but I did ask the date if it was okay for me to go and say hello to him. And yeah. he said yes, so it was his fault. Anyway, we got together and he entered me into Raw Comedy, which is a national stand-up competition, without telling me.
Nice move. Okay.
He went, guess what you're doing in about 2 weeks?
Oh, my God.
And
didn't
tell me. And he went, so you better write 5 minutes. And I went, but and yeah, but it was honestly was the best way it could have happened, because I don't that's know incredible. I would have pushed myself. It sort that's, of gave me a...
As far as I know, that's a totally unique origin story.
Is it?
Yeah, that's great. Gave, you were bitten by a radioactive
comedian. Yeah. It was a real safety net for me, because if it went terribly, I'd go, well, I never said I could do this. You know, it wasn't that kind of thing. And yeah, so it went, it just was all been quite fast. It went, got through to the
so how long? How long have you been going then?
Coming up to 7 years. Okay. So that'll be... Yeah, starting next year will be 7. But it's a very different pace in Australia. In my first year, probably did a gig a month every 3 weeks, something like that. It was a lot slower. But so my 5th gig ever was the national final, which was in front of 1,500 people and crazy. Yeah, so yeah, so I just sort of, it just sort of happened because of that. It started
so when quite... you when he said, I've signed you up for a gig,
yeah.
did you think, oh God, no? Or did you think, come on then? You know, what was your...
I was excited about it because I had written sketches and I'd been watching... I'd been going to gigs with him, so I'd been sort of watching it more and more. So I thought... I was excited about it. And the fact that I didn't really have a choice, you know, I got to play a bit like, oh, no!
Yeah!
I don't want to. But it's interesting thinking about that first set. Like, it had a theme. It had a beginning, middle and end, okay. you know? Like,
really?
Because, like, yeah, I didn't know.
So what, you instinctively wrote a theme because you didn't know about comedy? Just talk to me.
Yeah, I just didn't know how to do one-liner joke. I thought, I don't know
how
to write.
Oh, I see what you mean. So you wrote almost like a 7-minute... Play
kind yeah, of yeah okay. monologue. It was about being safe was the theme, and I remember because you don't have any concept of time.
Yes,
like you have 5 minutes and you get a light, and I remember just you know going over as you do. We're not going over, but the light came on and I just sort of panicked. So I had like 3 sentences left, and I just said them all extremely quickly because I thought, oh well, it's not going to make sense. You know, it was one of those weird things where it didn't cross my mind.
Oh, but I haven't got to the denouement, the autistic. Yeah.
Just went, and then there's something else, see ya, and ran away. So yeah, it was good. It was a good way to do it. I don't remember. You know, you just forget gigs, but you do remember. Do you remember clearly your first one?
I remember, yes, a little bit of it. Not clearly. I couldn't remember. I think I was trying to do something about... I did something about sex and death being the primary motivators of everything. And it's different.
Whoa.
Different if you're a mayfly, and it's different if you're a vampire. Right. Yeah, I can kind of remember the thing. It was like, if you're a vampire, then it's death, then sex. But if you're a mayfly, then it's sex.
You're
death.
Ahead of your time.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was doing stuff that now looking back seems pretty generic, but at the time felt like, you know.
They stole your idea.
So did you... You said you didn't have a kind of a preconceived notion. Did you have an idea of what you'd be like as a stand-up? Did you have a sense that you could go and keep doing this? Or did you think, I'll give it a go once and I'll see, or
no,
what?
That was it. I went into it as a writer because I was so scared of it. So what my plan was, I went, I'm going to work so hard on this script and write this script so well so that no matter what... Here was the plan, right? No matter what, if the joke is funny enough, then it doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
I just wanted to write a set that was... categorically funny, you know, like as a protection thing. So as long as I said the words, it'd be okay.
Yes.
But no, I didn't know that I'd be any good at it at all. No, I'd never been I'm not a naturally hilarious. It's not something I've always wanted to do.
Okay. Let me ask you another favourite question of mine. Is it something that you feel you have to do now? Do you feel like you're moving through comedy on the way to somewhere else? Or do you feel like without comedy there wouldn't be a you or this life? What's your relationship to that?
I really don't know. I find it interesting that I'm very scared of taking any time away from it because you've got to keep doing it, otherwise you'll fall behind or you'll lose your skill. You know, even if I don't have a gig for a few days, it gets scarier and scarier. I don't know. I don't know if there'll be a time when I'll go. And then I did stand up for about 10 years. I think I will always do writing and comedy, whether or not that's always doing stand-up. I like doing shows. I think I'll always do sort of hour shows. The club gigs, I don't think I want to do forever. You know, I don't think I ever want to be just a a touring. I don't find the thought of going around the country by myself particularly attractive. But I love new material. Like, the best situation for me is when I've got a writing job during the day and then I gig locally in small places at night.
Sure.
So then it's for fun. I don't like when everything is about stand-up, when it's that's all I'm doing and there's a lot of pressure on it. It's the best for me when it's fun and it's creative and I can do what I like and not stuff that I feel I have to get by in a massive room, or, you know, when people are really judging you on that kind of stuff.
I enjoyed this interview enormously. Celia is a wonderful comedian, and now I can prove it rather than just telling you how great all these people are. I've put some links, a YouTube link to Celia on Russell Howard's Good News on the blog page, and there's a link there to her Facebook page as well. I'm going to put everyone's links up for all of my guests so far, so hopefully that will become a regular thing. More admin for me, hooray. But yeah, so I've got a look at that. It's comedianscomedian.com/blog. And I'll make it a little bit more visible on the homepage as well when I make my web monkey get round to it. Celia and I discuss in this episode opening lines, the makeup of her 20, or the fact that she doesn't have a specific one. That's quite interesting. We discuss her writing techniques. Good, there's some good techniques there for when you get stuck on your writing as well. We talk about hour-long shows. That's Celia's favourite form, I think, is to write hour-long shows. We talk about stories, concepts, themes, what it's like to be a binational comic, and the different ways that European and Australian comics use different festivals, and of course my old favourite, how on earth do you cope, which it is becoming apparent is sort of what this show is all basically really about. I'm thinking of interviewing some bookers and promoters and things like that on the podcast as well. If you've got anyone in particular, give me a shout. If you'd like to suggest someone, or you'd like me to get my teeth into somebody, then give us a shout. info@comedianscomedian.com. Tell me if you think the stings are annoying. You know, the little twiddly jazzy stings? I like them, but I hear them probably a lot more than you do. I wonder if they're starting to grate. There's no need to email me in just to tell me whether you like them or not, but if you're emailing in for another reason, just include a little thing, whether you like them or whether you think they're a little bit too twiddly. New hack has gone a little bit mental. You can upload your submissions and suggestions for the contemporary hack topics, not just sort of standard stuff like, you know, Prince Harry's illegitimate. It's kind of like, okay, that's tired, but we're after specifically new hacks, stuff from the last few years that you're just starting to see be used all over the place. I've got some examples here in no particular order. My favourites this week include, it was literally the most amazing thing I've ever seen. There's an awful lot of that about. That was submitted by Alex Perry and Leo Kurse. Alex and Leo both went bananas on this and submitted hundreds. Leo made a very good submission, which is telling an anecdote about your racist nan, who probably isn't racist in real life, so that you can do some racist jokes. There's quite a bit of that about, or arguably, is there? Any flyer using the words warning contains jokes, that was submitted by fabulous comedian Chris Boyd. Someone called Tom, who didn't leave his surname, put in, calling a man in a check shirt Brokeback Mountain. Holy hell, I hear that all the time. It makes me want to puke. I hate that. It's a casual, I mean, I don't know if you could call it homophobia. It's certainly unimaginative, and it kind of is homophobic. It really gets my back up to see people implying someone's gay for comic effect. That really winds me up. A lovely submission from Gary Delaney, which is, this is the weirdest gig ever, brackets, at a very mundane gig you're desperately trying to get some life into. That happens quite a lot as well. My favourite this week is, that normally gets a round of applause. That was sent in by James Gill. Thank you for those submissions. Please keep sending them in. Please keep looking and checking worriedly to see if anything you say is up there. That's a couple of people I've spoken to socially have said that they've been doing that. It's not a witch hunt. We're not having a go at any individual here. These are just things that if they're on the list and they're in your act, probably you could be saying something a little bit more specific or more true. Now let's get back to Celia Pacuola. And I'm afraid in the edit here, Celia, we're going to open this section with a funny little noise that Celia makes over a question I was asking her. I can't remember what it was about, but she's very musical. You can hear her, the musicality of her voice, and there's a lovely example right now.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcast or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
How do you measure your success?
By the fact that I'm not a waitress.
Okay, on an individual gig-to-gig basis. Talking about live performances now. If you're talking about live shows where everything matters, it all counts. Okay. How do you cope with whether it goes well or badly? How do you, you know, say you've had a stinking gig.
Oh.
What do you say to yourself?
Oh, I take it terribly.
Do you?
Because
I thought you were going to say, from what you've described so far, I thought you would be someone who says, oh, it's fine because it's all about the writing and stuff.
Be mad on. No. Very, very, very super insecure. Super, super, don't know how I've happened to get to this, you know, very much paranoid in every way you can imagine. I take it very badly. I'm trying to take a leaf out of the wonderful book of Pasco. That podcast was excellent, and I've been spending a bit of time with her, and I think she's got a really good mentality about it, which is to go, it's fine.
Yes.
I'm still learning and getting better, but it's still hard not to have sort of flashbacks to it, and I don't like people who haven't seen you before thinking that that's what you do. And also, I don't really want to get into the female thing, but on some level I do feel performing as a woman, I'm kind of performing for all women, not for me, but I have the feeling that sometimes if a guy's not good on stage, they go, that guy's not good. But if a woman's not good, they go, see, women are...
I see what you mean.
Thinking that there might be someone in the audience who already had a preconceived notion that women aren't funny. Yes. And then if they see me have a bad gig, sure. Go, see.
Sure.
So
sure. I suppose the nearest... I see what you mean in terms of, like, I don't feel like I'm letting the side down. Sure you don't feel like that either, but yeah. I don't feel like anyone would think that I was. The nearest connection to me is like if I'm comparing, which I don't do so much of now for this reason, mm-hmm. or if I'm doing like a long, like a sitcom warm up, I feel like the whole thing's resting on me. So if I do badly, I'm doing badly for other people.
Yeah.
And I much prefer it to just go out and live or die on my own 20.
Yeah.
But I suppose if that's what you're describing, is that's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah,
potentially.
A little bit. And also, it just makes me feel bad. You know, you never,
yeah,
you come off and go, oh, maybe, you know, and you're down ties, where you go, well, maybe, you know, that was it.
It's maybe I'm supposed to be a waitress.
Maybe I'm not. Yeah, maybe I'm supposed to be a waitress. Because sometimes you do go, why am I doing this? I don't know about you, but sometimes the sort of dread and the horror that you can put yourself through before a gig, sometimes I just go, this is supposed to be fun. Why isn't it fun? But
How long before a gig? How many hours before a gig do you start?
It depends what it is. And this is the other thing as well. The more gigs I'm doing, the better I am, the less freaked out I am, because there's no time. And you just go, well, you did that last night and tomorrow you're going to be somewhere else, so it doesn't matter. If there's one big gig coming up and I've got not much before it, then I'll stress out about it more. But when you're busy, things are in the past sooner. And that's what I've been trying to do, which I'm finding helpful, is just reminding myself that I think about gigs years ago that I was freaked out about for months and months, and now I never think about them.
Yes.
You know, once it'll be in the past. So I think I'm getting better mentally about it, but you never know. You just have a couple of good gigs, you know. And sometimes the gig after the terrible gig is a great one.
Sure.
But just trying to go out thinking that... Now I sort of tell myself, you know, just trust the material more and sort of trust what's going to happen. And I've been doing some gigs where there's been more sort of interaction, which is new for me because I'm not an off-the-cuff kind of person.
Okay.
So the way I've been thinking about it now is I go, just trust your material, go out, and if someone heckles or whatever, we'll deal with it when it happens, because sometimes I can get a bit in my head if I'm doing a sort of rougher gig.
Sure.
Trying to mentally prepare, and sometimes I'll try and think of lines that I could say, and then I just
As long as that person says exactly what I'm imagining, then I'll come back with this. Yeah, okay.
So just try and take a breath when that happens and just relax, and they don't know that I'm freaking out. But yeah.
So with the gigs that are successful, having talked about how you cope with when it goes less successfully,
yep.
What I'm getting at is what does it mean to you
to do well? Is that just you kind of tick one off and go, yep, that was a good one? Yeah. Or does it affect your sense of self? I think when I have a bad one, yeah, it can send me into dread and shame and feeling awful.
Yeah.
And when I have a good one, I sometimes worry that the feeling from having a good one is very elusive. You go, yeah, I had a good one. And, oh, now that feeling's over. You know what I mean? Like that, it's a much, it seems to last less long.
I think you're talking about a drug.
Yes, maybe I am.
But it is a bit like that, you know, when you do sort of want to, yeah, chase that good feeling. And I think that'd be the big thing about thinking, if you stop doing it, you know, trying to replace that. Because we currently live a life where you do get massive adrenaline,
sure,
rushes and those kind of feelings, high stakes emotions, mm, 3 or 4 times a week. And, mm, if they weren't there, I don't think it'd be weird to go back to, you know, not having that.
Yes.
I think we're junkies is what I'm saying.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it does. If I have a good one, I mean, I'm not great with taking compliments either, you know, which is, so if something goes really well, it's a bad habit, but I will tend to brush it off like it was a fluke. You know,
like it was a fluke. Okay.
Well, sometimes I do, like, if someone gives you a compliment, I'll just sort of be like, oh, you know, it was because, oh, there was this going in my favour.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like finding a way
favor
to kind of minimise the praise, yeah, that you're entitled to actually, yeah, accept. It's, you don't accept it.
I don't feel, I'm not a person who would go, you know, I don't walk around and go, I could smash this room and it's,
sure,
and that's right and that's how it should be.
Or, sure, sure.
Like, just if it goes well, that's really wonderful. And I'm so surprised and happy that there are people who are prepared to book me and who like my stuff. And I don't know when that will end, but it's just kind of, you know, does that sound completely...
Do you feel like you're getting away with it?
Yeah.
That rather is my first than it's thought, something you're entitled to and that you're...
That is my first thought when I come off stage.
Okay.
I got away with it.
Okay.
You know, which is... I don't know. Like, it's one of those things is sometimes I look at really super confident people and I go, geez, that looks like it'll be fun. But at the same time, I think I'd rather be insecure and work harder and this than arrogant than the other
yes,
way around.
Yes, I see what you mean.
All,
yeah,
the crap that comes with this and the...
And the self-doubt.
Mania and the, yeah.
Yeah. Is preferable to you ethically than being rock solid confident leading into arrogance?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's nice. That's nice. I hope I'm the same. I hope that I sort of aspire, you know, to that kind of humility. Yeah.
Yeah. I just.
But at the same time, there is, presumably we are entitled to a middle ground where we just feel good that we did something good.
Yeah. And I do. I'm proud of stuff. Like, I'm getting better at it now.
Yeah.
I'm proud of, like, my show this year. I was proud that I did that. And
I remember talking to Dan Atkinson a couple of years ago and saying, Dan, what's the next goal? He's a couple of years above me in, yeah, the comedy tree, as you know. A couple of years above me in the tree, that doesn't make any sense. I was in the bank earlier on and some bloke, the guy I was dealing with in the bank, he said, you know, if we get this wrong, they'll come after you like a ton of bricks. A ton of bricks would not come after me. I'd be fine if that were the case. But I was talking to Dan and I said, what's the next goal? I've just become full time. I've just quit my job and now I'm full time. What's the next,
yeah,
goal? And he said, well, the next goal is you need to cope with it.
Yeah.
You need to come to terms with it. You need to go, oh, I'm a comedian in the world and this is no longer a thing I'm trying to do. It's a thing that I do and that's fine.
Yeah, do you still feel weird doing that? Calling it? I mean, you've been going...
Well...
I sometimes feel a bit...
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I have my own insecurities which bleed out throughout all of the episodes, so we won't get into me too much as I'm sort of trying to kind
but
of...
But it drives me crazy. Like, you know, and I know that because when I speak to you and obviously we've performed together and, like,
yeah,
that's mad to me. Like, how can you not know how, like, the fact that you'd be insecure at all is ridiculous to me.
Thank you.
How confident and,
sure, sure,
great you are at it. But I understand.
Totally.
I absolutely,
yeah, absolutely
understand that there's
absolutely
nothing I can say. Yeah, it's just one of those things.
We'll get into writing in a minute. We'll get into structure and process and all the rest of it.
Yep.
But something I wanted to talk about is you're 20 at the moment. I don't mean you are 20 years old. I mean you have a 20-minute set. You're 20. What's in it?
Well...
Why... Do you have a set that's your set or what?
No, I do not have a 20.
Go
which
on.
Which is the cause of much stress for me, and I really wish I wasn't this way. I wish I had a 20 that I'd been polishing, that I polished a 5 and then I polished a 10. I don't. I do a different set most gigs. and it drives me insane.
You must be closing on the same thing, are you? You've got to close?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes. There's a few things that will go in most times.
Okay.
I write a lot. I do things for a bit and then not. I've got stuff that I did for about a month and then just stopped working for whatever reason.
Okay.
I try and plan because my sets are... I often go to a gig on the way that I go, can you just plan a set and choose what it's going to be and lock it down so that you know it and you're not so stressed about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then every time I get to the gig and I just go, well, that's not going to work here for whatever reason. It's rougher than I thought it was. It's this, that, the other. It's nicer. You know, like I can plan a set that I want to do and then I get there and go, nah, that's not going to fly.
Okay.
Here, like I've got my preferred stuff. This stuff, it's funny. I was reading your new hack list.
Oh, yeah.
Holding my breath. Because I've got some stuff in your face. Or in the face is one that I went,
in the face?
What's in the face, just as a tag.
Oh, yeah, sure. In the face. Yeah, I hadn't even seen face. That. I hadn't even seen that one. It's been submitted, yeah.
No, that's me. I don't know. I just thought that's one. But I have that in a joke. Like there's some material that I do that I have that makes me feel ill, but it works in a big room.
Go on, tell us about this. What kind of
you've
stuff?
You've seen it, just in the face is I saw someone get a stranger, punch someone, another stranger in the face by accident, which is fun, like in a big room. That's not the joke, because it's not fun like that, but you know what I mean? Like violence, or I've got a bit of material about boobs that I just, you know, and hand jobs.
Ah. Oh, the hand job stuff. So you don't like doing the hand job stuff?
No, I used to. Now I don't. And it's now become like my most well-known bit of material that people on the street go, hand
jobs. It's the hand jobs lady.
Oh, yeah. Missy, it's really great. And I could be talking about, we've got such an opportunity to talk to the world about whatever we want. And I don't want to. I think... the goal for me is to get to a level where I can do the material that I want to do and the stories and that kind of stuff in a big environment or at those kind of gigs. So
you feel like you're doing that stuff because it's dirty and easily accessible and it'll definitely make a big room laugh. So yeah. You fall back on it, whereas actually you'd rather not do it.
Yeah. And sometimes I cannot do it. Like, it's not that I don't... They're not awful jokes. It's just, you know...
They're not awful jokes. They're great jokes. They absolutely do the job.
That I'm proud of and I think is cleverer and just more interesting.
I really empathise with that.
But so my job... And also I get bored really quickly of material. So many times I've gone, right, from now on, just whatever your best stuff is now, just keep that together and it just doesn't... work. And also stuff like doing, I feel quite a bit exposed because I've got quite a lot of material online, so that's in the back of my head as well, that I don't want to
the that fear that people might up. Have seen it already.
Yeah,
is that a realistic fear, do you think?
It happened the other night. I walked out of stage, five people in the front row went, oh, we just watched you. And I went, what? On okay. YouTube, we just watched it. And then luckily it was a half an hour set and I it was all quite a lot of new stuff, but there was a few bits, and when I started doing it, I saw them like nudge each other in the ribs, go oh, and they were fine with it. But I don't feel good thinking that someone
it's an odd thing, isn't it? Because I always use the example of Mickey Flanagan. If I go and see Mickey, there's four or five key bits that I really want him to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they're nudging each other and going, it's that girl that we saw and she's going to do that thing, that is quite a positive energy. But at the same time, you don't want them... You want to be able to...
You don't
fresh.
Want the comments going... Which I shouldn't be looking at anyway. I'd never look at the YouTube comments going, yeah, it's good, but you do the exact same thing when I saw a lot. Like people who actually who watch your stuff and then come and see you. You want to give them a new thing.
Yes, of course. Of course you do. And I don't mean they're idiots. But what I mean is... people often don't seem to realise that you have a routine, and that is your like, you know, if they go and see Deep Purple, they want Smoke on the Water. Yeah. How old am I? That was my go-to reference. And obviously, I've talked on the show before about the unfairness of we're not musicians and we can't do our favourites, we can't do the hits, the classics in the way that we might want to. But so you don't have a 20. Do you have an opening line?
20. I do at the moment, but again, that changes. And I really struggle with opening lines.
Same. I had an opening line about 2 years ago. I had an opening line that I used for a year and a half, and it was great. And it required wearing a particular pair of shoes
that
were the shoes that I wore anyway.
Yeah.
But
what happened? Did you lose them?
No, well, they wore out, and I just changed the shoes I wear, and now I can't. It doesn't. The joke doesn't work. And also, I started to feel like, oh, there shouldn't be an opening line about your shoes. I mean, I yearn to have an opening line like Miles Jupp's old opening line, where Miles Jupp would come out and say, my name's Miles Jupp, and I'm very privileged not just to be here, but also in general.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And that just sets up, bang, here's who I am, here's my relationship to you. I want an opening line like that.
Yeah.
I'd murder for one, for just something, so that that's the fret that I have. I have a close, I have a selection of 40 or 45 minutes that I can put into a 20 that I'm, you know, plus whatever new stuff I'm working on. But I don't ever have an opening line, and I'm always at the beginning of a gig going, what am I going to start on? And I like to compare my way in and ease my way in. But then if there's been a really good compare, like an Ed Gamble or a Rob Collins or someone, he's just done all that stuff, you can't walk on and go, let's get stuck into you, because everyone goes, no, that's all been done brilliantly. So I need an opening line. So do you have an opener?
At the moment, but I wish I had a better one. My favourite, because it's so important. You know, gigs can live or die by that first thing. And I've got a perfect one for when it's just gone freezing, which I like. But the best one, because it's not even that funny, but it seems off the cuff and it's enough of a little to get into it, which is when I'm jet lagged. So I do get to use it quite a bit. Going back and forth. But I've got one at the moment, which is just about living here, which again is not, it's not great. But I really struggle with a good... You just need a one-liner sort of thing, and then I like getting into the stories. And in terms of the set, I try and mix it up so there's a little bit of, for 20s, like a little bit of maybe sex stuff, but not too much. Just try and keep it a bit varied in terms of the types of jokes and the pace and that kind of thing. But I often struggle with the end, the closing, because I'm so paranoid about the first 10 minutes being tight and punchy and get them. And then I just sort of go, oh, and then I forget that, oh, crap, you've got to...
I've got to be better than that.
I had quite a big gig the other night, and it went well, and I couldn't believe it in my head. I was like, it's going well. And there was a few sort of heckles that I actually said something to him, and I was like, oh, God, he said something to him. And then it just on the last joke, a bit of sort of chat broke out with just these people were trying to interact with me, and it just broke my heart. I was just like, oh, I was so close. I was so close to getting in out of it. But,
So you have done how many hour-long shows?
I've done 3 solos, yep.
And how has that process of writing an hour changed? Let's talk about, before we get into the shows, let's talk about your writing process. Let's talk about your desk, your environment. Where do you write? When in the day do you write?
I write all over the place. I think I'm the most creative right after a gig.
Okay.
When I'm all excited and pumped up, and I'll come home and sort of...
It seems so easy after a gig, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's so hard at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning.
Yeah,
you come out after a gig and you just go, I just need to say some things.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And stuff sort of bounces off. So I do that. I sit on our balcony in our flat, and usually we'll drink... In the day, I drink a lot of tea, and then at night, I'll drink wine and beer. I've never sat at my computer at night inside.
Okay.
Really, if it's at night, I've got a notebook and not wine. If it's at the day, then I'll write on my computer sometimes, mainly notebook first, a lot of notes, and then I'll try and write it out when it's a set piece, because there's so much stuff that I go, I had a bit about that and I can't find it and I can't remember the wording. So that's really how I do it. Try and keep them in some sort of order, but it's everywhere. I've got so many documents called new material.
Yes, I know, man. The hard drive's a nightmare.
Like the guy actually I used to date, the comic, he used to have like the most amazing system on his computer of folders, but he'd put it into categories like animals, bird categories. And I'm like, I just couldn't, because they're never that set.
No, sure.
Anything. So that's how I write in general. Or I walk around sometimes if I get sort of stuck, and I talk to myself a lot, which is difficult in this country because there's always people around.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
There's nowhere where there's no one.
You can just go and have a wander and talk out loud without feeling self-conscious. And
it's ridiculous. I had to do an audition for a little thing where I had to scream, and I couldn't practice because I was like, someone's going to call the police. Scream anyway. For writing shows, it's been a bit different because my first show was just a story that happened to me in my life that just happened, the natural story of it had a beginning, middle, and end, and it was just a process of fleshing it out and putting jokes around that. The second one, I had a more of a concept and an idea of what I was more of a was a doing show. Mm-hmm. Was a I'm going to do a challenge show.
Okay. Okay.
With a theme as well, which I think is my favourite show, which is about doing things on your own, which is such a broad topic.
Yes.
So that had actually did have three through lines through it, which I really liked that came together. Anyway, okay. So that one, again, I sort of had the framework for it and these three storylines and then adding jokes to those. And then this one was just straight stand-up. I didn't have a concept. I had 2 years' worth of jokes and just wanted to put it into a show, and it's been really hard.
Really? You found it harder to write without a theme?
Oh, my God, so hard. And I couldn't stop working on it. So I kept, because it was jokes, I could add and change stuff the whole time. So I never stopped changing it. And because I could, and it was just sort of not really, the other two had been about a real personal thing that was really important to me. Whereas this one was not as much that. Okay. It was really just about living here and doing the long distance, which is fine. I'm sort of fine. It wasn't a, you know, the first one was about relationship and the second one was about my mum, really. So it was, every night was real fun to do it. So I found it so hard. I was talking about this the other day. If they were children, right, my third one is like the least talented child that needs the most attention. Do you know what I mean? Every day I was like, oh, but... Whereas the first one, my firstborn, was just
a golden baby formed, that never cries. Out. Let's have another one. Just, oh, they're a nightmare.
Just came out. So, so I don't know what I'm going to do next. The reason, what I am happy about is they've got, I believe, progressively funnier. The jokes have been better. Because I did the first show, which I think was theatrically a good show, but the joke writing wasn't there and it wasn't tough enough. I got heckled and there was nothing. Nothing was so vulnerable. The whole show was just, hello, here's my rib cage. I just wanted my rib cage to just stand here and give you some spears on the way. And there you go, welcome. And then, so the next one I went, well, the next one, I still want to have the emotional stuff in it, but I want it to be tough, more robust joke-wise. Mm-hmm. And then this show, I was trying to make it just jokes and I didn't want to get pigeonholed as a story.
So that was a deliberate decision to do a non-story-based show so that you could prove to the world you could just come out and bring the...
Kind of, and just for me, and for me as well, just to see what it'd be like. And also I didn't have a story, there was nothing else, there was nothing really going to do a show about me. So was your show, was yours a story show?
This, the first one was a story, the second one was the exploration of a theme. I tried to write about my anxiety and what,
oh,
it,
did you?
What it means. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I know. Right. What does it mean? Over tell the, well, me, I don't know what it means.
Over the course of the run, it meant that two individual audience members came up to me afterwards and went, thank you, that's exactly what it's like.
Oh, that's great.
Just two people, though, in the entire room. Because everyone else kind of went, really? Do you do that? Oh, you're weird.
No, they didn't. They're too paranoid to tell you about.
Yeah, well,
they
maybe,
went,
maybe.
Crazy guy. I went home and cried.
And then the third one, I tried to do... I tried to kind of both have a theme and have lots of great jokes that are derived from that theme. Yeah. So it didn't have a story, and it was... I mean, it ended up having a story. It ended up having a story. But I sort of feel like I've always wanted to do the show that's called, you know, Jingly Boggles or whatever. That just means nothing.
Yeah.
And you can just write and put all your best stuff in it. But it's never occurred to me before, as you say, that you would end up, or one would end up being in a position of going, this is never finished. With my other ones, at least I've gone, this is finished. Like this year, on the first Saturday, after the previews, annoyingly, had lots of viewers in on the previews, it was all shonky. Saturday, after the previews, nailed it, and just felt this flood of relief going, that's the show I wanted it's to done. Make.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you might. Like, this is obviously still in line with the fact that I don't have a 20
sure.
that I do.
Sure.
Anyone else might, but for me, just... whenever, you know how naturally happens in shows, some nights things would work and some nights they wouldn't. I'd just cut them. I'd go, you know, go.
Yeah.
Once it stopped working, I'd go. Or if I wrote a new bit that was working, I'd just put it in. I'd go, okay, well, that's working now, and put it in. So that, I don't know that that would happen to everyone. But, yeah, for me, I found it really frustrating. And it just meant that I now don't have a new show because I spent so much time. I've only just finished working on that one. You know,
yes, I see what you mean, yes.
Because usually the process would go, I'd do the show in Melbourne, and then between Melbourne and Edinburgh, I've got time to work on the next show, because that show's finished.
Okay,
but I was working on this one that whole time.
Sure.
And I've put in new material that would be for the next show, and it was just a real problem child. It really
yes,
was.
Okay, so you're having to put in your spare stuff that's like your next lot of stuff is being used to shore up the...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
It's interesting, isn't it, the way people plan things in advance. I've been doing some writing with Nish Kumar.
I just did a gig. Yeah, yep. I've done a couple of gigs with him this week. He's hilarious. We have bonded over how, which you wouldn't expect when I said this to him from watching his material, just a shared joy to all things toilet related, pretty much. Just how funny butt is, the word butt, and yep. bum and ass.
it's good. I'm glad he's moving into those areas on account.
I think he's going to do on stage, but yeah, you watch on stage, is you know, making social statements and all this kind of stuff. Then you can't feel like, hey Nish, I saw your butt. Laughing.
He's got 20 minutes of new stuff for next Edinburgh.
What?
I know. So I was telling him he should really push himself to get another 40 in there, and on the 1st of November he should do a preview and make it publicly available on Facebook and call it something like Nish Kumar puts the shits up everyone else.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Just to have that. I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, you've got the kind of the Australian perspective of going, there's possibly Adelaide, then maybe Melbourne.
Yeah.
And so that's when the show happens, and then you've got the next few months. And it seems a much more healthy way, I suppose, to be going... To be doing that cycle rather than just being in one country. And just like for me, ordinarily, and I'm not writing a new show at the moment, but ordinarily having my entire year geared around
August.
Okay, that's it. You have September off, and then October the 1st. Oh, I've got nothing. Let's start again. And, you know,
yeah,
be writing there. But I suppose splitting those deadlines.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people do it, you know, usually people from here will do it the other way around. Do Edinburgh first and then take the show to Melbourne.
Yeah.
A fully formed, ready show. It's funny because you see the two different types of people that first week in Melbourne. You
know, yes, okay.
All the internationals chilling out. They're like, oh, this show is 6 months run in. I am sweet. All the Australians doing the, oh, God, what made a horrible mistake? Is this show any good? So, yeah, it's tight deadlines, though. Like, if I was doing, I don't think I'm going to do Melbourne next year, but if I was, the registrations are open now. Right now. You have to decide now. You need a blurb now, title now for a new show.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow. Let me, and I'll cut that wow as well because that sounded ridiculous. remote note to self, don't say
wow.
So talking about the writing process, again, you said earlier on that you know, if you get stuck, you'll go for a walk or something. So that would suggest that you have... Do you have, like, a certain number of hours or a writing schedule in the day? Do you say there's certain days on which you'll write? Or do you just go, no, I'm in the mood now, I'll go for it?
Yeah, a bit in the mood. I've never had, like, I'll do it for an hour, ever. But I do sit and write a lot, scribble a lot of notes. And, you know, sometimes I can be sitting there for hours and write. I'll just end up writing things I need to do, things I need to buy for the house. And then sometimes you'll just get an idea and it'll be 5 minutes of new material that's usually spoken. If you don't talk it out loud, it'll just be notes written down. I got some good advice from a horrible person. Don't you hate when that happens? I'm like, how can you be right? You're such an asshole. Which is, if you're stuck, like, trying to think of new stuff and you can't think of any concepts, because I find it really fake to try and go, trees, squirrel, which is what's outside my window. To go back to an old bit of material and see where that might lead, what would come after that. So say it's material about, you know, going to a nightclub, then what might go after that and spreading it out from there. So I do that a bit. But, yeah, pretty much whenever an idea sort of takes me, or if I've got panic, I like doing new material nights a lot.
So booking yourself in for them and then on the day going, I better write something for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good fun, actually. That crisis is a really nice motivator.
New material nights are my favourite gigs.
Which ones are your favourite out of the new material nights?
Old Rope.
Yes.
In London is my favourite. It's the best. Chris Mayo has got a nice one in Islington as well.
Oh, someone mentioned that to me the other day, yeah.
But Old Rope's one that I suggest as a gig to punters, just because if they ever want to see any show, because it's such great value for...
Yeah, it really is. It's an incredible night, isn't it?
It's a really nice vibe. The thing is, sometimes I find it's a bit too nice. Like, I've done new material there and gone, well, I'll tell you that straight to the back. And then you do it somewhere else.
Doing Reading highlights and thinking, hang on a minute, Rope loved this. Yeah.
So I like doing that. I like that because it's funny, even if it's not funny. It makes it funnier. Mm-hmm. If it's awful, and you just go, well, never say that again. And it's hilarious. It's wonderful. There's no pressure on it. I like when there's low pressure. I like people underestimating you and you doing well rather than people having a really high expectation and you
and you having to try and
yeah which is why I sort of like, oh, like I'm not doing this to get, I don't want to get super famous. I'm really not about that at all. I'm happiest when people have no idea who I am and then they're surprised. And also as well, like sometimes in Australia, I remember when no one knew who I was at all, going to gigs and sometimes there'd be like promoters there saying stuff like, oh, so whose girlfriend are you? That kind of thing, and giving you real attitudes. And then you get on stage and have a good gig. And then afterwards, them kind of be like, oh, so yeah, hey, but I'd be like, too little, too late, buddy.
Yeah.
You messed it up.
Ruined it. It's not good enough to ignore me beforehand and then be nice to me after I've done
well.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
transparent. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like that this industry, as I'm sure you know, I feel does reward, will reward good behavior.
The writing itself, when you say you're just, you know, if you have an idea, do you go in for automatic writing? Do you just kind of write and write and write? Or do you do spider diagrams? Do you have any kind of Ooh. Processes or rules? And
I do diagrams for shows because it's such a big thing to keep in my head, an hour in my head, you know?
Yes.
To sort of draw, and I like, yeah, drawing.
So an actual diagram, like a cartoon of the show or a...
No, no, can't, just like words. Is that yeah. a spider diagram? Words in circles with lines yes. coming yes, out of it. Yes. So that's why I was spider. I'll do that to see where things can connect, and sometimes I feel that's a good way to do callbacks for an hour show, to sort of step back from it mm-hmm. a bit. But for other bits, I will generally talk it out to myself. A lot of
like
gibberish.
Pacing around the room or
And then sometimes I'll record it on my phone and playback, but not often. Usually I'll just sort of write out the keywords and the bits that I like, and then I'll run it at a gig, and it's usually quite clear where the funny bits are. I wish that I was more interested in polishing stuff, whereas I'm not. I'm more interested in a new idea.
Okay.
Like I go, why would I go back and work on this? It's not quite working, when maybe the next idea I'll have will be perfect the first time. So I've got a lot of stuff that's okay that might be good someday, but I won't go back and look at it.
Okay.
I'll just
because it's the joy of creating a new thing that you're most excited
about. Yeah, and sometimes it just does work, which is why generally most of my stuff that I enjoy the most, that's the most long-standing that works, is a little bit of a story. So then that's never going to change for me. It's sure. when it's a completely just an idea, I find it hard to keep it, because you got to choose which part of it you want to focus on. But when there's a story, like that's the story, and then you just make it funnier around that.
Yeah. So do you have any particular, just you're talking about advice, do you have any kind of rules that, or particularly good bits of advice to do with the writing process? Anyway, I mean, it was like the most obvious example is sort of the rule of three, which can kind of mean anything you wanted to. But I mean, like, I will try and invert a thing. I'll think, that looks interesting. Let's imagine if that were backwards or if that were upside down. Do you have any kind of like systems like that? Any means of attacking or unpacking a subject?
Yes. I don't know if you find this as well. It's frustratingly, I find myself better at not fixing other people's jokes, but I can see in other people's bits.
Yeah, far more than your own. Yeah.
But I used to write jokes for a show called Good News Week, which is like Mock the Week. So I used to write news jokes based on articles, and some of them were so dry, and you go, how do I get jokes out of this? And I always think of, if I get stuck, the who, what, when, why, how.
Tell me about that.
Well, just when you get stuck and you go, I don't know where else this could go, go, who's doing it? What is it about them? Are there any jokes about them? Why is this happening? You know, when did it happen? Just to, as a way to...
To sort of fill it the information and spread it out about
so you can see it. Like, for example, Well, this might be a bit too graphic, but the thing that happened on Saturday that I'm hoping will be a bit is I got sexually assaulted.
Jesus Christ.
Not in a bad way, but not like I got... I'd call it a lingering flash. Like, it's a man with a boner. It was fine. And what was... But this is the thing. So that's what happened. I got... flashed. I was talking to a girl outside on a street, and there was a man standing behind and we were talking, and I was mid conversation, and I just looked down and saw boner. Now that's what actually happened. So the what I find interesting about it is the way that I reacted to it, because it's one of those things where you don't know how you're going to, if you'll be brave if something awful happens, you know, what you're going to do. And the way I reacted, which I think is very much who I am, which is logic. I'm about facts, about logic, and I basically just say what I see, and I responded in a way like a stranger had dropped their wallet. I just went, "Bet your cocks out," just like. Just complete, like he didn't know. And then I kept saying, just going, mate, you've got your cock out. You've got your cock out. Just
brilliant.
Like,
what a brilliant way to deal with it.
Anyway, and then it goes on. So for that, so that's what happened. And right now
it's like you've dropped your not having your cock out.
That's sure. I don't know if you've noticed, but you've got a boner and shown it to me.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and then just told him to leave, and then I just went, just go. I went, fuck off, because I don't have etiquette rules for this in my head. But the only thing that I kept thinking was, once I've seen your boner, you leave. Like, like that's just how.
Surely this is how this works.
Like it's it's hide and seek, and you've been caught. Like that's what happens now. That's the gotcha. Rules of flashing is.
Yeah, it's done now. Off you go.
But like, so that's the actual thing. So now. I just think it got so many ways to go. So, like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Why is he doing that? Why did I react the way that I did? How, you know, and all that kind of stuff can go out in a lot of different directions to sort of shake things up. But yeah, it's, at the moment I'm struggling with that. How do you release? I don't know who described it this way, but I like the idea of a joke is like you know, shooting an arrow, you know, and you want to have it at the most. The amount maximum of tension to let it go so it hits
without the string breaking.
Yeah, you know when you know what the joke is, but if you let the joke go too soon, it's like it doesn't have the maximum impact.
So that's
I find
great.
That when you've got an idea, there's 100 different ways you could reveal the joke. But finding the best way to do that to get maximum effect, because with this, I'm sorry if this is too graphic to be talking about boners. Because to me, the funniest part of it is my reaction to it. So I could build that up as being, you know, how do you think you're going to react? What do you think? And so they're trying to guess what it's going to be.
Sure.
And then that's the reveal. But the other funny thing about it was that I was talking to my girlfriend. We were having a conversation about a gig, actually, about a comic. And I was talking and she didn't see it. She didn't know, so she thought I was just that was part of the story. So I was like, "Oh yeah, I was at this gig in this guy, you know, there was a comic there, and he was just doing this thing. Mate, you've got your cock out.
Yeah,
mate, you've got your cock out." Okay. And she thought it was just part of the story.
Okay.
So then you could do it that way, which is to set up all of that story and then reveal it, like what she didn't know is there was actually a man behind it.
Yes, I see. I see what you mean.
But a big thing with me and jokes is always logic, and that's the main thing that I see in other people's jokes. If they go, "It's not working," I go, "That's because the audience are distracted thinking about that thing you said earlier, which doesn't quite make sense."
Yes.
Like, I love that about jokes that
if it doesn't ring true, you can engineer it such that it does.
Yeah,
if you can spot
it. You have to tie up all the things when they're getting distracted. It's like I did a gig with lovely Tom Rigglesworth night, and he had a joke that I loved because I was trying to guess what it was going to be, and I really thought I knew what it was going to be, and it wasn't, and it was brilliant. You know, when you just go, that was so not what I was thinking in any way, shape or form.
Sure.
But yeah, so I love that kind of stuff. I don't do sort of pun. I don't know how to write it. Joke really. It's always they all sort of have an emotional or a logic beginning.
Yes.
For me.
Yes, okay.
Even if it's something that's happened to me, I think so often the humour is in the fact that I have learnt that I often react to things in a very different way than other people do.
Okay.
Like that thing? Like
yes,
the fact
sure.
that I would that's my first
surprisingly
response.
Matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or like, my whole life seems to be stuff that I think's normal, and I tell a person and they go, "You do what?" And I go, "Is that not a normal thing that people do?"
Okay.
this is probably sharing too much. But you know when you meet someone, for girls often, and they fan, you know when you meet someone, you have like a daydream
mm-hmm.
about them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a standard daydream? Do you imagine like marrying? Do you imagine a wedding or like family stuff?
Maybe sometimes a bit.
I don't know. I think maybe girls a bit more. But one that I've always done. This is going to sound insane. Well, I didn't think it was insane. And I told someone, and it is. I will imagine not marrying them, not children with them. I'll imagine dying in their arms. I've done this with many, many potential partners, and you mix the situation up a bit, you know, like you do with any, but usually it's...
Like to see whether they'd be worthy, like, would this work?
I think it's just wanting them to, I don't know, it's usually a drive-by shooting. We're on a date, we're walking along a thing, and the car goes past and I get shot by accident. I'm not a gangster.
You have collateral damage.
Yeah, yeah, complete accident was my fault at all. But I don't die straight away, obviously, so they see me being really brave. And they're like, oh no. So
I think I do things like that, but I don't have a one that I go back to. I don't have a particular one that I do. It just sort of noodles off to different.
I love that kind of stuff. I love it. And I because sometimes I look at audiences and I go, oh, do you find this? Like I've looked at audiences going, I don't know how I can entertain you. I don't know what we have in common. And
yes, sure.
So it's trying to find I'm always excited when... I'm excited that anyone likes what I do when it's so... You know, they have to be... I don't know what my point is here, but that can be interesting to someone else, that me talking about stupid little things in my life, that people would find that interesting.
Yes.
Incredible to me.
Do you think... This is something I've kind of been spotting in other people's work and wondering if it's there enough in my work, wondering if it's there, is telling people about their own lives.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of people who are now achieving real mainstream success, part of that is sometimes because they're telling people about their lives. They're talking about subjects. I don't mean like, for example, out of my own material, I've got some stuff on Nectar points.
Okay.
So the loyalty points. So yeah. And I feel when I'm talking about that stuff, like people are going, oh yeah, I collect those, and I suppose I have thought of it like that and not really noticed.
Yeah.
That's kind of quite a new departure for me, away from telling people a thing that happened to me or a way that I felt about something. Like an odd thing happened and it made me feel and think this. And sometimes you can see people going, really? Like, you know, like the anxiety stuff, you know. Oh good, that's nice.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're more in my kind of direction. You tend to sort of say things about, like, this dying in your arms thing. Do you feel that people in the audience are thinking, yes, I do that, or they're thinking, I have similarly weird stuff that is different but the same?
I think sometimes they will connect, and that's great, but then other times you hope that it's funny because it's weird and they have not thought of that.
Yes.
You know what
I
mean? Like, sometimes it's funny because it's so different to your life. I think the most entertaining, the best stuff for me is when it's clearly true. I would like to do more, because I haven't really, my life's not that interesting and I don't talk about politics or do, you know, important things about the world. So I would like to, the aim is to say things that are interesting that people wouldn't have thought of.
Yes.
Before, you know, that's sort of the goal, and really, it's hard to try and find stuff that make people think of things in a different way, which can be the simplest thing, like a little image that stays with people. Like I was gigging with Lloyd Langford, who had this amazing image about the toast. The ends of the bread. He's like, you should never eat the ends of the bread because it's like a love story, and then eventually they end up together. And if you eat one of them, like, then the other ones are left alone forever. Yeah. You know, obviously he does a lot better, and he'll probably, I don't know if you're allowed to be mentioned like that. But anyway, that really stays with you. So I'm just trying to make it more interesting. I think that can be about you or about, not about you, but if it's not about you, it still needs to be honest.
Yes.
I mean, that's just what...
One of the things I've got of which I'm most proud is all it is, and I can only make it work if I preface it by saying this isn't really a joke, because it stands out against the rest of my stuff that is really a joke, is that something I like to do when they open the egg box at the supermarket checkout to check that the eggs aren't cracked, I like to lean in and go, all right, lads, to the egg. And it'll only get a laugh if I say, I can't believe I'm going to tell you this, or something like, this isn't even really a joke. But I love it because I feel like it's mine and it's uniquely mine. It's totally surprising. No one's thought of it. And yet they do, under the right circumstances, they do laugh and empathise with it in a crawl. Not empathise, they recognise it. It's satisfying somehow.
Yeah.
And it feels very precious, and it makes me think that's the kind of stuff I want to do more of, and I want to do less about less sexy, weird, interesting stuff about interesting stuff that's happened to me, and more kind of like the my take on stuff. the stuff in their lives.
Well, that's why I like doing, I think I'll always do our shows, is because that's where you can really do that, because they get to know you and you can delve more and just say interesting things. Like sometimes, particularly in an hour show, it's sometimes nice that it's just an interesting, true thing, and it doesn't always have to be, you know, gag. Like, it's, like sometimes I've done gigs, sometimes they're just listening. You know, have you done those gigs where... Or even I've been to gigs when I'm a bit tired or it's a Sunday night or something, and sometimes it's just really nice to listen to. And I'm saying, it, you know, it always should be funny, should be the goal, but I think sometimes it's all right to have little sort of moments of just interesting things that, and often they're the bits that stay with you, I find, after a gig when you walk away. You don't remember the big punchline, you remember the little bits.
Do you think that you are one of us?
Ooh, or one of them? One of us. What does that mean?
Do you think, let me ask that in a better way. Do you think that you are, when you're on stage, there's an audience looking at you, do you feel instinctively like you are one of those audience members who has got up and said something, or do you feel like you are an other?
Oh.
Do you see what I mean?
I feel like an other, yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. I am intrinsically scared of them, you know? And I know people can't understand, like people used to always book me for emceeing stuff because they go, but you're so friendly and chatty. And I'm like, that doesn't mean that I'm good at, you know, I'm not the person who loves going to meet strangers. Sure. I'm perfectly nice and I like strangers, but I'm not going, these are my people, you're just people like me and we're one, and... I love when we have a connection, but I do feel my on my own up there. And I, if it's going badly, I do, or not. Sometimes even if it's going fine, I can get into my head the reality of the situation, which is I am one, and they are maybe, let's say there's 50 of them, and physically they would beat me in a fight. Like I do see the reality of the situation is. I don't know that I'm in charge. I am currently in control of 50 strangers, which I would never stand up to. Like, I never want to cause a scene. I am so anti any kind of conflict or drawing attention to myself in the real world. So sometimes it gets into my head going, you're the only thing that's stopping this from being is you keep talking and pretending like you're totally in control, totally calm. So, yeah, the people I identify with the most, like, as allies in the world, I've thought about this, are people who didn't like high school. They're my kind of people. That's it. If people go, I hated high school, I'm like, yeah, we're probably going to get on. Yeah.
So that in terms of your persona on stage, you see yourself as more of an outsider than an insider. That's kind of what I should have asked, I think.
An outsider in the world.
An outsider in the world. I don't just mean physically in the room, but what I'm saying is, are you coming and telling some normal people what it's like to not be normal, or are you telling some normal people, hey, this is what it's like for us, or for us normal people?
Oh, I think I'd probably like to imagine that's what it's like, because that's just that wanting them to accept you and like you. And
you'd like to imagine that you're of them, that you're normal.
Yeah, but just... I would. I want them to go... Yeah, because you want them to know and like you. And a lot of comedy is about, you know, finding that point of reference, having stuff in common. And
hey, you're like me, I'm like you.
And that's the best way in to make a point with people. If you go, we're similar, and then you can deviate more. So if you've got stuff in common with them, which is why I like it to start in a real place and then you can take it somewhere weird. You know, so you can go, we're all together on this point, but here is where we're different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think so, yeah. I don't think I'm really coming in with any radical ideas. I mean, stuff about me is a bit weird. Like, I'm not super weird. I'm not weird enough to be...
To be a weirdo.
Yeah, which I kind of am annoyed at that. Like, I'm a try-hard weirdo. I just feel I'm okay, you know. It'd be a lot more interesting.
Wouldn't it be useful for my comedy to be more weird?
If I was weirder, but I'm not. I'm more of I'm a dork. I'm a dork. I'm not a nerd. I'm not a geek.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a stylish. I don't know exactly where I fit into the world, but I just try and...
But you do fit in.
Oh, stop it. Because I've got a passport, so I exist in the world.
But what I mean is, if you like your perspective, the perspective of your persona on stage is perhaps that I don't know how I fit into this, but I do.
Yeah.
Rather than I don't fit into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that. Yeah.
That was a slightly confusing question from my part.
No, it's interesting because I don't know, like, I wish I had a thing, like, in terms of persona, it's me. It's just me on stage.
Yes.
Being me.
Yes.
And being,
You're exactly like this. It's your voice, you're you, that's
and
you.
I can't sometimes wish that wasn't the case, where I had a thing where I've always sort of struggled with that when people go, what's type of comedy do you do? Like, you can't, in a nutshell, the main thing I get, and I know you get this as well, is you're so nice.
Yeah.
You're very likable, aren't you? And I just go, oh, I want to be just funny. So sometimes I wish I had a thing that I was really, like, there's a friend of mine in Australia called Alison Bias, who's gorgeous, petite, blonde, blue-eyed little thing, and she spouts the darkest, you know, weirdest stuff ever. And I just go, you know what you
That's
are.
That's a great,
you know,
dynamic. You're the cute, nice girls saying the dark, evil stuff.
And doing this, getting, you know, it's been 7 years now, and I do feel like I thought that by now maybe, you know how some comics just do that one day, go, oh, actually,
this
I'm a
mime.
Like, they suddenly have a big turn.
Yeah.
And I've sort of been waiting for that, but I now know that I don't think that's going to come. I think I'll just be me, but I think I'm getting more confident at talking about more,
being more honestly
substantial stuff. Well, honesty's not really the problem. Like, the first show was way, because I had no idea how bad people could hurt you. I was like naive going, what? Yeah, of course I'm going to tell everyone about everything. But I think I'm getting better. I'd like to eventually talk about stuff that's more important to me. And because we've got such a great opportunity to talk to people about whatever you want. So I'm going to fix the world, I think. I'm not, but if you could just little things, is great. Like stuff like talking about the anxiety show. If there's one person in there who's having a hard time and sees that and goes, yeah, or one person who goes, I do that too, and it's okay.
Yeah.
Or even just being just keep doing it. Like, again, this isn't really a woman thing, but I do get a kick out of when it goes well, being there. Like, I remember I went to the Comedy Store 7 years ago before I was a comic, and Kitty Flanagan walked out, who's an Australian comedian, and I was in the crowd and went, and just was so amazing to me to see an Australian woman come out and be great. And I just went, yeah, like, I think it's, and I don't want to be a waitress. So
the end.
Keep doing
So thank you to Celia, thanks as ever to Too Entertain, thanks to Toby Rose, and a particular mention for Pete Jones, who does my video stuff. He's putting together a fantastic showreel of some of the live shows that we did at Edinburgh just gone. Pete is an incredible video guy. Frustratingly, he lives in Scotland, but if you're a Scottish act and you need a video man, and you're prepared to stump up hard cash, because he's very much worth giving a bit of cash to, but he's a really, really good guy. Can't recommend him enough. So if you need a video guy in Scotland, do give me a shout and I'll pass on Pete's details. If you have 5 years or so as a stand-up comedian under your belt, then my beautiful daughter might be at your disposal. All you need to do is ask. See you next time.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.